ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
For the first time in over 50 years, astronauts will soon fly around the moon.
They're ready to fly.
But there are real concerns about their safety.
We're playing Russian roulette.
In our series, The Challenger Legacy, we trace the history of two space shuttle disasters. And we ask, what are the lessons for today?
I'm Karl Kuschelnitsky.
And I'm Fiona Pepper. Binge all the episodes now. Just search for The Challenger Legacy on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
So Tegan, normally we have this agony about our headphones when we start recording.
Yeah, I always hear myself in stereo. But have you been very, very good today, Norman, and turned your headphones down so that I'm not hearing my own echo?
I have, but can barely hear you. But nonetheless, headphones is part of the work that we do at the ABC. And I do seem to come across quite a lot of deaf people at the ABC, but maybe they just don't like listening to what I've got to say.
Sorry, what's that?
Ben?
All right, we better get into it. This is, of course, What's That Rash?
The podcast where we answer the health questions that simply everybody's asking. And this week they're asking?
They're asking a lot of questions about headphones. Mel says, I have a question about long-term hearing damage. I have been to lots of parties with loud music. Okay, Mel, you're popular, we get it. I was wondering if this will cause hearing loss when I'm older. I can hear perfectly fine now, so I've always assumed any damage has already been done. Also, Mel asks, does wearing in-ear headphones cause long-term damage? Alita, similarly, is saying, I can't help but notice the number of people using earbuds. I was wondering if they affect the hearing ability of the wearer. And Katie, who loves our show, says, most of us wear headphones and or earbuds a lot. What are the impacts on our hearing, our ear health, our cognition, and our sense of connection to the world and community? Great questions. I'm really excited to get into this one.
So to help us along, you and I had to do some homework.
Yes, we had to do our noise risk calculator survey. I want to know what your answer was, Norman.
Oh, you mean the conclusion that this calculator came to about how much damage I was doing to my ears?
Yes.
I was on the low end.
Were you?
I was.
I don't know if I'm just... Okay, so it's asking questions like, how often do you go to noisy gigs? How often are you at nightclubs? Are you using power tools? I can't remember what some of the other, and I was like, no, never, never.
How loud are your headphones when you listen to them?
But like, it came back saying that my noise exposure was too high.
Oh, really?
Which made me go, I feel like I have a very boring life.
That's right, you're enjoying life, but you haven't noticed.
Maybe I was just over, I do turn up the music quite loud in the car and sing along very loudly to show tunes. Pretty frequently, which is the dorkiest way to give myself hearing damage, honestly.
That's one of the questions they do ask in this noise calculator, which, and we'll have the link to that noise calculator in our show notes so that you can do it for yourself. And I've always assumed that it's those loud, sharp noises that really do the damage to your ears. But it turns out it is about chronic, long-term and frequent exposure to loud noise that really does do the damage.
Well, chronic, long-term, frequent is definitely how a lot of people are using headphones these days. I'm sure more than we used to, actually. We should talk about the history of headphones. It's another one of those ones where I really wish we had like a video component. So I'm going to do my best to describe some of the apparatus. But basically, when do you think sort of headphones first became like a big thing?
Well, I'm kind of assuming the ancient Egyptians didn't have headphones. So
it's one of the few things they didn't have.
Wipe out that one. You know, Alexander the Great, probably not. So I'm guessing when electricity started to come in, maybe 19th century, late 18th century.
Yeah, fine. Okay, you nailed it. So basically, I think I had imagined like Walkmans are when people en masse, I think, got their
hands. Did Queen Victoria have a Walkman?
So that was not until like the late 70s, but the 1890s, there was this guy, a French engineer, Ernest Mercadier.
You mumble that one.
Yeah. Ernest
Mercadier.
He patented a set of in-ear headphones that are not actually that different to in-ear headphones or earphones that we would have these days. They weighed less than 1 3/4 ounces. They were adapted for insertion into the ear. And they even had a little rubber cover to, in his words, lessen the friction against the orifice of the ear, effectually close the ear to external sounds. So they were soundproof. And basically, they were for telephone users. So this is, we finally had the telephone.
Really? So, yeah. So not mobile, obviously, but nonetheless telephone.
No. Well, and I've also got to tell you, so this is one of the things where I wish I could show you a photo of this man. He looks like, he looks deeply hipster. He's got this steampunk kind of apparatus around his ears, and he's got like a, what I now know is like an old school telephone, and he's writing a message. Anyway, the other one that became more, I think more people probably encountered it, was this company called Electrophone in Britain that you could subscribe to be able to listen to the theatre or the opera.
I'm just looking at the photograph now. It looks a bit like a wishbone in your ears.
It does. It does. This very glamorously dressed young woman listening to the opera with a great big smile on her face. I can only assume it's working. Anyway, not surprisingly, the technology really kicked up a notch in the lead up to the two world wars. And so because we had the telegraph system and we had telephones, having the ability to hear remotely was really useful. Anyway, so there was this guy who invented telephone headsets that were for military use. And he was this guy, he basically wrote to the US Navy to be like, you should use my invention.
So this is like one of the letters we used to get, the ABC. It came with different colored handwriting.
And it did.
And normally you'd throw it in the bucket thinking, this is a...
You know, dare you not take listener feedback seriously, Norman.
One day I'll tell you some of the stories of listener feedback. We enjoy, let me tell you, we love your feedback. But in the olden days, had some weird shit.
When you get a handwritten letter, it's either really, really good or really, really bad. Anyway, this one,
1910. Did you ever tell you about the guy who walked?
Go on.
So this guy walked into our office. God knows how he got past security. And walked straight to my cubicle and sat down. And he had a plastic bag in his hand. And he said, I've been trying to get a hold of you, and now at last I'm sitting with you. And he said, I've invented a device to cure erectile dysfunction. and he lifts up his plastic bag. And I said, well, really? And he said, would you like...
You're terrified of what's in that bag at that time.
Exactly. Would you like me to show you? And all out comes all these sort of plastic tubes and stuff. Luckily, at that point, the commissionaire came in and removed him from the premises. So I'll never know what was in that plastic bag. But luckily, life has changed and we get very sensible feedback from What's That Rash audience. Back to hearing.
No, I was going to say, the only thing that could have made that interaction worse is if he'd lifted up his shirt and said, what's that rash?
But
it would have been a great origin story for us.
Long before his time.
Anyway, Nathaniel Baldwin writes a letter, purple ink on blue and pink paper, to the US Navy in 1910. And he's like, I've made these telephone headsets, you guys. They didn't take it seriously originally, but they did eventually test it and they found it was much better than the model that was then being used by the naval radio operators. And so they're like, okay, yes, please. Can you make us a whole bunch of these things? And he said, well, yes, but I can only produce 10 at a time because I build them in my kitchen at home. And they go, okay, let's make you a factory somewhere else. He was based in Utah. Turns out he couldn't leave the state of Utah because he was a polygamist.
Oh, so they had to build a factory in Utah.
Exactly. It then evolves into stereo headphones. And then, like we said before, 1979, the Walkman comes out. And in the long tradition of health reporting, there's a story just 3 years later agonizing over the fact that this new technology is going to be the downfall of us all.
That's right. Distraction of children and the destruction of their ears.
Correct. They're worried about people on city streets because these young kids with their Walkman stereos are not going to pay attention to where the traffic is. And then, yes, this idea about the volume damaging the listener's hearing. They quote a young bank employee in Tokyo, I do not think they are good for your ears. My parents warned me not to get a headphone stereo. Which we're going to get to the sort of damage that these things can do. But when I read something from back in the day where everyone's sort of wringing their hands over this, like, oh, the world's going to end, the sky's going to fall, the young people are doomed, it's a good little bit of seasoning to put on top of our current reporting about things like AI and social media. I'm not saying that it's good for us. I'm just saying that sometimes the bad can be overstated.
Yeah, when a new technology comes along, it's always doom and destruction. And then maybe it's partial destruction, but not total doom.
Well, let's talk about the destruction of our hearing. I suppose to do this, it would be good to recap on what actually happens when sound encounters our ear and how our brain decodes that.
Yeah. So sound waves come in through your ear canal and then gets to your eardrum. The eardrum vibrates, and then there are three tiny little bones connecting your eardrum to the inner ear, which then transmit the sound to your inner ear. And in your inner ear, there are fine hairs in fluid-filled tubes, which then translate those sound waves into electrical impulses, which then go through the nerves to part of your brain, the auditory cortex, which then reassembles them into sounds that we can make sense of. So it's a very complex apparatus.
It's very complex that the fact that I can hear your beautiful dulcet tones, so much is going on to get that decoded in my brain, Norman.
There is an alternate route, which is via the bones.
Oh, because you can have those bone conduction headphones these days.
That's right. And in the old days, you know, when I was less of a pretend doctor, more of a real doctor, when you were testing somebody's hearing just or a child's hearing, you would bang a tuning fork and hold it by the child's ear, and then you'd hold it in the bone behind the ear to see where the child might hear it more loudly. Should hear it more loudly via the air in front of the ear, so when you hold it in front of the ear. But if they heard it more loudly via the bone conduction, it meant there was something going on in the middle ear because you could transmit straight to the inner ear via the bone conduction. But these little hairs in your inner ear are very sensitive, and they're the ones that get damaged with loud noise.
So you've got, like, is it like a physical damage because of the sound waves impacting the hairs in a very, physical sense?
The transmission is a very physical transmission through these little bones to the inner ear, and then you get these waves of energy going through the tubes in the inner ear. And that wave of energy, if it's strong, can damage these delicate hairs. That's the theory.
Is bone conduction a safer way of listening then? Because I'm hearing you say that the same loudness would be heard softer through bone conduction than through the ear hole, which makes me think if I'm using a bone-conducted headphone, I'm maybe having the volume louder to be able to hear it?
I'm not sure we fully know the answer to that question. But all that the bone conduction avoids is the middle ear. It still goes directly to the inner ear because there's no way that you can actually translate those sounds back into sounds that you can make sense of other than going through the inner ear and then being transmitted by the auditory nerve to the auditory cortex. So one would assume that if it's really strong energy coming in through the bone, it could damage the inner ear in theory.
So we know then the physical damage to that apparatus is what might cause hearing loss long term. What do we know about how prevalent it is?
So if you look, let's just take a step back. If you look at the questions being asked by this evidence-based assessment of your risk, they put a lot of emphasis on pubs, on concerts, on venues that you are actually being exposed to loud sounds on a regular basis. And we already know that occupations where you are exposed to loud sounds like aviation, in factories and what have you, you really do need ear protection against those loud sounds because those loud sounds in an occupational setting are at high risk. But if you don't have one of those jobs, then if you are exposed on a regular basis, frequently to high volume sound, you are at risk. And that includes through headphones. And the World Health Organization reckons on that basis that over 1 billion teenagers and young adults are at risk of developing hearing loss on top of age-related hearing loss because of unsafe personal audio devices or noisy environments.
That's crazy. So I think it's implied, but can we talk about what that means for people if they lose their hearing? One of the questions we got was about social connection and cognitive health when your hearing is impacted.
So there's two really interesting angles to the social connection issue. One is there is a relationship between hearing loss. It's controversial, by the way, because there's been some dubious research into this. But there is a relationship between hearing loss and cognitive decline. And it's unclear whether it's entirely due to the hearing loss or the social isolation that occurs due to hearing loss, and therefore you're not connecting with other people as well. But that's after you've got established hearing loss. There is another angle to this social connection issue, which is through the headphones themselves. Mm. So there's this debate about noise-cancelling headphones. One is that when you're wearing headphones all the time and you're listening to stuff, you're not communicating with other people.
Sometimes that's the point.
Well, that's
sometimes
right.
If you're on a bus and you're like, please don't talk to me, I'm going to put on these big can headphones as a signal to leave me alone, please.
So that's social connectedness, and there's not a lot of research to back that up one way or the other. And some people who are on the autism spectrum find it comforting to wear headphones because they can control the amount of auditory input that they get because they can be highly sensitive to loud sounds. It turns out that noise-cancelling headphones are probably better for your hearing than non-noise-cancelling, and that's because the noise cancellation allows you to turn down the volume.
Yes.
And it's the volume that counts.
I think about when I'm on a plane or something, if I've got my noise cancelling function on, because I do have noise cancelling headphones, I'm not competing. I'm not just turning the volume up and up to compete with the sound of the plane.
So you'll not find very many studies on this, but the theory would be that they're better for your hearing. And a lot of these new earbud or relatively new earbuds that you find that connect to your phone or your laptop, they're also noise cancelling, and therefore you could listen to them at a lower level.
Okay, can I sense check something with you? I saw an article about something called auditory processing disorder and whether maybe wearing noise cancelling headphones makes that more likely or makes it worse in people. This idea that all the time when we're listening, like when we're hearing, normally, we're tuning in and out of different sounds that we can hear. So if I'm in a busy environment and you're talking to me, I can tune into your voice and kind of tune out the rest of it. I've read that there's an argument by some people in the know that perhaps if people are wearing noise-cancelling headphones all the time, that their brain isn't getting as good at tuning out that less important sound. Is there anything to that?
Theoretically, I suppose it's possible. There's not a lot of research to back it up one way or the other. And the reality is that most people are not wearing noise-cancelling headphones 24 hours a day, and that for a lot of the day, you are actually receiving the complexity of sounds in the general environment.
Okay, so let us then give people some guidelines around what's a safe listening guidelines if we're trying to protect our ears without depriving ourselves of our show tunes.
Well, I think first of all, if you love going to live music venues, protecting your ears when you go into those loud environments is a good idea. If you're listening to music or the spoken word via headphones or earbuds, you really find the lowest level that you can achieve, that you can hear it comfortably. And if you are in an occupation where you're exposed to loud noises all the time, then you do need ear protection because that it's length and intensity that really makes the difference.
I mean, Hearing Australia has some pretty practical guidelines around it. One of the things that they suggest is the 80-90 rule, which is basically listen at no more than 80% volume for no more than 90 minutes per day. So then I guess for most people that would be 70 minutes per day because 20 minutes at least once a week is taken up with listening to What's That Rash at full volume, I assume. I can only assume.
Yes, but we get our message over it. It's very subtle.
Very subtle, very soft, very ASMR.
And I noticed that one of our favourite people, Brian Johnson, who spends squillions a year trying to keep
not
himself
dying.
As young and not dying, is actually wearing hearing aids.
Yeah, I was interested in this as well because we basically devoted a whole episode to tearing holes in Brian Johnson's entire approach to life.
And now it turns out including his eardrums.
Well, you and me probably need to eat at least some of our words because basically he has a whole thing about keeping his biological age as low as possible so that he can live for as long as possible. And there's all different sort of factors that he's looked at. And he shared that his left ear has a biological age of 64, which
that
is
older.
That must
have knocked him for six.
Well, right, I know. But he said he had repeated exposure in childhood to loud noises like gunshots and music. He's noticed that he's hearing damage and now he's getting hearing aids, which he speaks about things like the social isolation that we spoke about, the cognitive decline that you referenced as well, and just decreased quality of life. And he points out that there are no therapies to treat hearing loss apart from hearing aids, which I can't argue with. So I guess we've got to give him at least one point here.
Indeed. So he's gone over to that to keep himself socially connected as a high priority.
So for Mel, Alita and Katie and anyone else who's worried about ear health related to their headphone use, what's our bottom line today?
Keep the volume as low as possible. Noise cancelling is a really good idea. Don't worry too much about in-ear versus over-the-ear. It's just what you find most comfortable. But just keep that volume down. And if you're going into loud venues where you're really going to get blasted and you're doing it a lot rather than just once every so often, maybe think about earplugs.
Mel, Alita, Katie, thank you all so much for emailing us with your questions. You can be like them and email us your questions. Our address is thatrash@abc.net.au.
And our mailbag this week.
Yes. So we talked about vitamin C supplementation and scurvy a lot last week. Terry has given us a bit of a history lesson on why Pommy sailors were called limeys, and it's because they used limes to ward off scurvy.
Yeah, we didn't say it on the show because we were down on James Lind, who supposedly did the study, but yep, the daily dose of lime. But the trouble is, according to Terry, is that limes have way less vitamin C, he says.
Jackson has also emailed in response to our episode on doing nothing. And I think the takeaway from that, at least for me, was doing nothing is whatever you want it to be. And for Jackson, that is a 40-minute hard effort on his road bike, typically accompanied by some electronic music from my bone-conducting headphones.
Uh-huh,
right. It's where he often solves work and personal challenges and comes up with creative ideas. Is a hard bike ride doing nothing, Norman?
Well, it's allowing his mind wandering. So his brain's doing nothing other than mind wandering. So if that's what Jackson gets out of these bike riding and bone-conducting headphones, that's great.
Love that for you, Jackson. And one more email from Kylie, just because it gave me the warm fuzzies. Kylie says, I'm a long-time listener of your show, and honestly, it's the only thing that gets me to my weights workout. Knowing I can listen to an episode to get me through, I also love the health report and the varied and interesting topics covered.
Well, you just must have the biggest muscles possible, Kylie. I'm really impressed.
Because we never shut up. And for all of the people who emailed correcting my pronunciation last week, I think you both speak very well, but I particularly love Norman's pronunciation of necessarily. Thank you for providing great information to listeners.
Robin Williams is always going on about how I say necessarily.
You said it differently just then. You usually say necessarily. When I'm
under the pump, it just all falls apart.
I've got a long list of Norman pronunciation words that I treasure in my heart, but we've talked about them before, so I won't go over them again.
I'm just going to have an apricot for lunch.
Apricot, some yogurt. All right. Well, thank you all very much for your emails. It's been very silly and fun. Our address, if you've forgotten it, is thatrash@abc.net.au.
See you next week.
See you then.